Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Academy Opus Cassius, the cheese industry's unique center for professional development. For more information and to apply for courses, visit our website at www.academymons.com. That's academiemons.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to our summer season of Cutting the Curd, broadcasting on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Greg Blaze calling in from Boston, where I was made to cook dinner for 180 drunk, breakfast for 180 drunk people yesterday. So, you know, this is my break, and it's lovely to be here. On the line, I have friend of the show, co-founder of Culture Magazine, and generally multi-talented person, Thalassa Skinner. How are you, Thalassa?
I'm very good, and that's a lovely thing to say, Greg. Thank you so much.
Hey, you know I mean everything I say. Come on.
So do I, for heaven's sake.
Thanks, as always, for coming
out. I can't believe you cooked. For how many people did you cook breakfast?
We did breakfast for 180. I'm a member of this Swedish club that this is their, like, ushering in of spring breakfast. And so we got up at about 2 a.m., started making breakfast. We did, like, umpteen dozen eggs. I deboned two hams. We made them herrings. We opened the bar up at 5, and then we don't let them eat it, so we paid enough money for the bar. It's a great thing. You know, I passed through all the iterations of it. They made me work when I was, like, 8, you know, and then they made me work while I was drinking. And then now I passed through all of that, so now I'm, like, one of the old guys that, like, yells at people.
I can't imagine. I just can't imagine that.
I think I've always been an old guy that yells at people, maybe out of the hospital, breakfast room, you know?
Well, I'm sure the breakfast was great. I wish I'd been there, but I'm actually in Hershey, Pennsylvania right now.
Nice. What are you doing?
So I just met with a man named Jim O'John, who is product development. Jim O'John, who I said, I'm going to call you John O'Jim just because I have to now. And but we did a product, tried to put a pairing together with local cheeses to here and chocolates that are all part of the Hershey line. So it was very interesting. And there's going to be an event in September that will, and we'll do a class for VIPs on that, but there's going to be a big, kind of celebration of dairy and of all things that go along with the local area here, up here in Hershey, which is right next to Harrisburg. So it's beautiful, and I've got a lot of cheese and chocolate in my belly right now.
Yeah. That's awesome. Pennsylvania makes real good dairy there. It's nice there.
Absolutely. Nice. It is. It's beautiful. Absolutely. And history, Greg. Lots of history.
Yeah. Yeah. They were the only people here before we were here. The Massachusetts people. The Philadelphia folks. You know what I mean? The daughters of the revolution.
Yep. That's true. But, you know, the Civil War, all of that stuff, it's like there's a lot of history here. It's a pretty amazing place. Yeah.
Good town with good food and Philly and a good place. Well, thank you as always for coming on. We wanted to talk to you a little bit about what's new and exciting in the world of Culture Magazine. You know, I've had the honor of attending a couple of your counterculture events in the past. Maybe you could tell us about what counterculture is, who it's for, and where you'll be next.
I'd love to. Thank you for asking. I am pretty excited about counterculture. Counterculture started for the reason, in general, Culture Magazine is a general consumer magazine about cheese. And the reason it started was in order to help educate the general consumer about cheese so that it would lighten the load of those of us who were behind the counter. So
Right. It's
kind of coming full circle with counterculture, which is an industry only, so it is private, two-day educational seminar, for lack of a better word, that is free for all to attend. So anyone who works with cheese in any capacity, whether it be behind a counter or in a restaurant or as a distributor or a broker, anybody can come to this. And we have cheese makers, cheese people who age cheese, any kind of people that work with cheese producing it. They do presentations. And you yourself have been part of it, and so is Emily, who's alongside of you with Cutting the Curd. And the whole point is to, there's many things that are get accomplished by this, which the one that I find most satisfying is bringing people together to learn. And also to take away any of the lines that are drawn because you work here versus there. Everybody can come together in a neutral place and learn about cheese, about things that go along with cheese, and any question you ask is perfectly good. So that's kind of the premise that this was started with. And the presenters that we have, this is the third year now. The first year we only did two, but last year we did five across the country, and including Cleveland and Minneapolis and New York and Boston, L.A. And this year we've done already Portland, Oregon. We're about to do to come into Chicago in June.
Yeah.
And
Great. We're
going in September to Charlotte, North Carolina, and then we're in Philly in October. So we got a lot ahead of us.
That's great. I mean, as a participant, I really liked it. It was very nice in a non-agenda-driven way for people to get together and a lot of free information. You know, like.
Yep. Yes. I mean, you know, as kind of like you moderating that, I moderate. You moderating this, I moderate that, and I, you know, the goal is to break down all walls and to keep everything. Kind of, I mean, we have so many questions Go ahead.
What kind of walls? Do you mean like walls between people in our industry that don't often talk to one another, like that sort of thing? Or walls?
They're there. They're certainly there, but also, you know, people, there's all levels of learning. So people who are new to the industry can get intimidated by people who've been in it for a long time or who are old men and yell at them if they eat, you know what I mean, Greg? You know what I mean? And then there's this simple coming in and being, you know, just having to go back over the basics, because who doesn't need to go back over the basics? We all do on a regular basis. So it's really, and the other side of it is that we're a very quickly growing profession. So this is there are all these new things that are out there and we can't know about it or even come up with ideas unless we talk to each other. So this is one of those places where we can get inspired and just share ideas, ask questions, you know, I've grown immensely just by doing them because, you know, there are all these great people in the industry that we may not have met because they can't get to trade shows or they can't go.
Right.
They're not at a level where they're sent to the ACS, that kind of thing. And, you know,
yeah,
it's pretty fun.
And I've been talking to a lot of retailers lately, you know, in the wake of some stuff and in just in general. And it just gets so fractured. You don't have time to leave your own store. And when you do, sometimes, you know, you're like, you want to get caught up in the cool tourism part of stuff. You know, you want to go visit farms, you want to do all this, you know, so.
Right.
Like, and you don't get the traction, I think, from getting together, making out that somewhere. For some reason, and on a larger scale, not that we don't think it's important, but I feel to a lot of people it seems impossible, you know? Like, even
yeah.
take the something like the CCP, you know, or like get time off to go to the CMI, or like, God forbid, get time off to go to an ACS or to go to Bra or to go to, you know, to the contest for Sartori or like any of that stuff, you know, like we're all so fractured, I always feel like, you know, like.
Well, and you hit it right on the head, and I think the wonderful thing is there are so many things out there, but a lot of times we forget that people don't necessarily know that they're out there either. And
sure.
We can't help, you know, you and I are old timers in this industry now, God forbid. And, you know, we forget how much it's changed and how important it is to go back to remembering that and to learn from the people who are new in the industry, who are just getting that first excitement about what it's about. And
yeah.
We ourselves need to remember that we don't know everything either. So we have to kind of keep rebuilding in a way. And this helps with that.
I mean, even in the show, like in the time that I've done the show, this radio show, like, and someone asked me, you know, what I got out of it, you know, and it wasn't a weird question. It was from a person that makes money. Their job is to make money, and I was like, yeah, we dedicate time, we find services. He's like, so how much do you get paid for that? I was like, well, I don't get paid for that. And he was like, well, then you're a sucker, you know. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, so by putting it out there, like just trying to get information and learn to people, I'm a sucker, you know? It was like, I didn't understand that mindset. And also, it made me realize that, you know, a lot of people work jobs and are in an industry where they don't have a lot to learn. You can master the spreadsheets at the credit bank that you're at. That is possible. You can do that math. For us,
yep.
There's so much undiscovered things and so many innovations, and there's so much science, which I was afraid of, that's actually being brought down and couched in a way that makes us less scared of it. You know, there's a lot to sink your teeth into, you know, I think more so as a person that's been around for a long time. You know, I think sometimes we get used to saying things that we think are true, you know, and on some level it may be disproved, and we learn, we move on from that, you know? But I also feel like that, what I just said, keeps people fractured because in America, in American and cheesemongering in general, like, functions on the legend, you know? So, like, if you have the perfect legend in your community, you know, whatever it is, or the cheese, or whatever, like, you don't want anybody to sort of debunk that, you know? Because that, like, maybe that sells you a lot of cheese. You know, maybe it's an interesting story that you tell, you know? So we don't want to be proved wrong by our peers. We don't want to look bad. But by the same token, we, you know, by doing that, we take a little bit of the fun out of it. And that's why I like the counterculture, because it was a very inclusive atmosphere where, you know, people were not there to talk and prove how smart they are. You know, they were there to learn, you know, no matter what their station. And, you know, I thought you guys did a really good job on that.
Thank you. Well, I mean, to that point, when I was just in Portland, I was quite taken by the, as I sat back and I was listening to one of the presentations and kind of the way people were responding to it, and I talked with people about this, that you know, everyone has different ways of learning and different skill sets.
Yes.
So totally. To your point, you know, the fact that we even try to kind of bolster ourselves up so that we almost pretend like we know everything is setting
right.
ourselves up for failure. And I feel like one of the best things that I personally can do as a person, as a person in a you know, bringing together people, but also as an educator, is to not make people feel bad if this is not the thing that floats their boat. It's to say,
this is
the huge diversity of content that's out there, and we need everybody's skill sets in whatever area that you're good at in this industry. So, you know, I feel like there's a lot more to be done with that, and I think that one of the really, coming back to one of the understated goals of counterculture, is to create the ability for this community to work together better and to think more creatively about how everyone can be somehow involved with it, and not
right.
you have to have all of these skill sets in one person. It just doesn't happen. There is nobody that has all those skill sets. So, you know, it's nice to see everybody from the most amazing artist to the most, you know, cerebral scientist sitting in one room, all getting something out of it. It's a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah, it's totally awesome. And then really a thing that I think you've done well. So we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to continue our conversation with Alasa. And we're going to talk a little bit through the lens of what we've been discussing about education and learning coming together, about some current events in the cheese industry. So just hang with us for a minute. We'll be right back.
The Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training for cheese professionals ready to move their careers to the next level. The Academy is the only professional cheese school integrating hands-on practice, formal instruction, and curriculum-related visits in every course, and attracts students from such diverse countries as Australia, Venezuela, Ukraine, Canada, Sweden, Kenya, and India. Cheesemongering, cheesemaking, and affinage courses form the core curriculum. Sensory analysis training is practiced daily in every program. Applications are now open for The Life of Cheese in 4 days at the acclaimed Cellars at Jasper Hill in Vermont, May 30th through June 2nd. This is a great preparatory program for anyone planning to take the ACS-CCP exam this summer. The Academy is also accepting applications for limited spaces in Cheese in New York, an insider's tour, June 23rd through 26th, which will bring you to the Fancy Food Show, the Good Food Mercantile, and the Cheesemonger Invitational, as well as backstage visits to some of New York's best cheesy spots. Upcoming in the fall, there are only a few spots left for students enrolling in the Academy's suite of courses. Essential Foundations for Cheese Professionals, and Affinage, the Art and Science of Maturing Cheese. The Academy will also be including an excursion to the Slow Food Cheese Festival in Bra, Italy. The extended program runs from September 11th through 22nd. For more information and to apply for this and other courses, visit our website at academymons.com. That's academiemons.com.
Nice laser burst. That was sweet.
I know.
I like that. Cool, man.
Yeah, very cool. Cool is the word I had for that.
I was just, flashback is the word I had for it, but, you know, I'm recovering.
I thought I was in Star Wars for a minute, to be honest.
Yeah, I was in the stars all right. We're welcome back. We were just chatting with Lasa Skinner about Culture Magazine and Counterculture, the educational program offered by the magazine to cheese professionals. In this half of the show, I'd like to turn our attention to some recent news in cheese. First one is difficult for me to talk about, but it's one that's affected all of us who work in cheese and love cheese. That's the recall of the Volpe Creamery cheese's E. listeria contamination. Centers for Disease Control issued their final report on the outbreak last week. This has been devastating for so many people and families directly affected by this outbreak, as well as people who are like us who are familiar with these diseases and their maker yos. Don't want to dwell too much on the details, except for to ask you, Lasse, what do you think the consequences of this have been and will be going forward for the industry as a whole?
Oh, gosh. Oh, Greg.
I waited a long time to talk about this, and because I never wanted to talk about anything out of my depth, you know, and in a certain thing, in a certain way, this is very much out of my depth, but I feel as a cheesemaker, cheesemonger, I can speak to it on some level, but this seems to be the best, in a way. So what do you think?
Oh, well, I mean, I have no problem talking about it at all. In that, you know, because as we all love Yost, and I am, you know, I am sure that of all people, he is, you know, completely shocked and trying hard to understand all the steps that led to this. But I will say that of all people, you know, he is a heartfelt and incredibly responsible human. But anyway, leaving that aside, there is literally no food that's produced that doesn't have some risk attached to it. And I can remember, I think it was spinach that was, you know, grown in California that massively affected people that had E. coli. So, but, you know, we have one cheese maker out of so many that had a problem, and it did lead to some very drastic and, you know, problems. But I think the thing that needs to be left or be said about this is that the way that cheese is not only regulated, but the way cheese makers take to heart very seriously the way that they produce their cheeses is incredibly safe. And it is no different than any other food in terms of how it is cared for and the way that you actually...
Safer.
It is different, but if you're looking at seafood, it's, you know, all of them. They all have different protocols.
Right.
That's what I mean, is that, you know, but every... Go ahead.
Sorry.
It's your show. You go first.
Well, I think I ask you, you know, what do you think the consequences have been and will be going forward? I mean, I can opine on what I think the answers to questions are. I think the consequences haven't played themselves out yet, you know? And I think that how we will be affected is that equal and larger amounts of pressure will be placed on an industry that doesn't have a lot of resources that are easily available to help them solve scientific problems that are not very expensive to them, you know? So I think what should happen is that scientists should start falling on the right side of this problem, which is to how help these people make better cheese, and that food safety needs to be looked at, you know? But you have to change around, and I just did two nights listening to the Percivals talk about their book, which is fascinating. You know, and starting to turn around people's idea of, like, cheese is this thing full of pathogens. Pathogens are bad. If you just called them something else besides that and understood what they actually did for you, you know, we'd get a regulatory environment, hopefully, that would educate the cheese makers and would be able to help them curb those problems in the future. But I think, unfortunately, it's a lot cheaper just to make something to try to make it go away. And my fear is that that's the way they'll go, you know?
Well,
Well, yes, I agree. I mean, underlying everything is there are a lot of economic and lobbying things that go along with all of it, legalities too. So I think every one of us in this industry would like people who are in decision-making capacities, and that includes general consumers, to learn and to be much more educated when things are said and done than a blanket black-white statement. And, I think that if you really peel back layers, people that have had problems with their making of cheese in any capacity have done so because there are labor or other kinds of cutting measures that have been done because of all of the problems that have been laid upon them and the lack of resources that are there and open to them. And I know for a fact, and I know you know this too, that if you were elsewhere in a country that actually got behind its cheese making cheese makers, that it would not happen in that same way. So our support system is not there, and the way that we look at everything is so individual that you put this out there, I buy it from you. You are this, and there is nobody else that's looked at in any of that chain. Nor do we support it. So I think that is really of the essence when it comes to cheese making, because there's so many elements that go along with that, we need to look at things as a group and not say, oh, we have to get rid of people or get rid of things and just make it much more simple. But no, get behind people and help them rather than pull them down.
Well, we do that. I mean, as a consumer of that, to the original question, really, because the consequences of this will be that we're looked at much more closely, and as a whole, and things will just get tougher, until we get that environment of learning. That's how I see it happening, and I'll work my ass off to educate people on the store level and to let people know that cheese is such a safe food, and to try to get them to put some perspective on an incident like this, where certainly people aren't infallible, but there's a larger story than what these people put out in a slanted, industry news piece to make someone look bad, in that particular case. But if a cheesemaker attempted the corners to meet demand, and I'm not saying that's what happened here but if a cheesemaker is attempted to cut corners and make changes to meet demand, that's a really difficult trade-off. What resources are out there to help small producers avoid this situation? Guilds, ACS, the FDA itself, who's out there when problems arise? And as a small business owner, you're also trying to keep your business afloat. Who do you go to?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think that we have many people that we could call on, we meaning the cheese community in general, but it's all knowing your community, and it's looking to the person right next to you who's also making cheese and saying, how do I make it happen, And this is where we get also, and this is something I hope we change from in the next, I hope it's 10 years, but I think we're looking more like 25 to 30 years, that we have an infrastructure where people who are cheesemakers also have people who they work with who are managing herds, and it's not everything on one person, and that it's much more readily available, and that there's an infrastructure for, mentoring, that there, I do believe very heavily in the Wisconsin Master Cheesemaker program and what goes, that's huge.
Go ahead. People how to make master cheesemakers, gives them the underpinnings of structure that lets the structure, what I'm talking about in that structure is how to be clean. because, you know, we've always seen the puns and everything. Cheesemakers put it out there. They're like glorified dishwashers. That's absolutely true. I made cheese with Yost and his creamery, and we, Emily and I, scrubbed the fuck shit out of all that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I think that the Wisconsin system, rather than just having to struggle and do that on your own, having a system like that puts you through such of those products, you have to learn how to make them, you know, and then be able to sell them and saying you're selling them, even more than the sticker or like the advert, you know, you get a little bump in your sales and you get to be known as a man who makes free cheese. You're just going to have fewer returns or fewer of these problems, you know, because there's a system that supports you. So when you have a problem, you know who you go to ask, you know. Here.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly agree. I mean, I think that it's partially an American problem. I mean, I'm sure that this can happen in any place that doesn't have more of an infrastructure that just like us, where we think we have to do everything start to finish again. And it's similar to what we talked about in the first segment, which is everybody has different skill sets. And you cannot do everything all by yourself. It's just anybody who says they can and they still have other people not only supporting but giving them advice or help in some way, even if subliminal, that they fall back to. So, and then the Master Cheesemaker program. Sorry?
I am sorry.
No, you're not. You just want to talk and I can't speak over you, right?
You can speak over me.
Just kidding.
I mean, if you're in the room with me, you could throw something at me. I would be fine with that.
I think that, for me anyway, the Master Cheesemaker program does a couple of things. Besides the learning, you have to have been in the industry for years making cheese before you can even apply, and then you have to get accepted, and then you have to do it. So there's so many checks and balances that it can be seen for a lot of people as way too much work and time and whatever, but there's a reason for it.
And that's where you get the best makers like that.
Exactly.
I don't care.
Exactly.
That apprenticeship method is what makes good employees. I mean, I do apprentice work at a butcher shop, but the shit that they made me do, they wouldn't let me touch meat. I had to trash and threw away like old chicken juice for like a year. They were like, "You don't touch knives here. What the hell do you think this is?" You know, like, and like that made me really afraid to mess up, and very respectful of the animals that they were breaking down. You know, and that's what it does.
Yep.
You know, there has to be a fear of some sort of failure. But if you're going out there, your failure, your fear is that if something goes off, which it might, due to any number of factors that you have to figure out by yourself. And then you're kind of, you know, like you're not super supported. And what I said to these guys when we were talking about it, when I said on Jimmy Carboni's show, when the first Bulls run, and I think it was like the best regulation is done at the local level. You need to go to your state person, and then your state person has to work with you, your cheesemaker, so that they know. Like, you're like, man, you've been showing, you know, these kind of tests for what the hell is going on here. And then that person can take a look at the nuts and bolts of your business before it gets into the hands of the federal government, where they just make broad sweeping statements about you that can crush you, you know? Like, there's got to be somewhere between those two ends, you know, I think, you know? And then you got to hold yourself responsible for your practices no matter who you are, you know? And that's the tough part about it, but...
It's also a good argument for hiring expertise and actually looking at what expertise means. And I think that if you look at our very successful cheese companies in this country, almost without fail, they've either gone over to Europe to learn, or they've brought in people who have that background to teach them how to do things. I feel like that if we're going to rely on
a larger government system to understand our industry, they also have to have some kind of training to understand what we are producing is all about, too.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I can't tell anyone to do that, but I feel that very strongly that needs to happen. So, you know, there's education, as we started this out, on all levels. How do you make it so? It's there has to be an inherent interest in, rather than wiping out an entire portion of our cheese industry, there has to be a reason for them to do it.
Goddamn right. There better be, because I like to work.
There better
I
be. Like,
and if they come, if they,
well, you know, I mean, here's a case in point. Do we want to do without Gruyere for the rest of our lives? Because if we're really, we can't pick and choose. So are we cutting out everything that has in any way been made for a for centuries with raw milk? It doesn't make sense. So we can, we're not stupid people. We can learn how to do this.
Yeah.
So we just have to have the protocol. And I don't know about you, but all of the raw milk cheeses that are produced in Europe, I can't live without them. So what does that mean? You know?
It means I'm going to be blowing my brains out on the air. That's not good.
Exactly.
No, but seriously, I'm with you on all that. I'm really glad you get to talk a little bit about it. Like I said, I was really careful. You know, Yost's a good friend of mine, and he really is.
He's terrific.
I don't want to say much, but I think, you know, people need to know. People need to be involved on some level. And, like, my questions with you is, like, let's just move forward. Who helps us out? We don't want to do this again. Tell me what I have to do as a cheesemonger to make sure this doesn't happen again. Tell me what I have to do as a cheesemaker. Tell me what I have to do as a Board of Health official, as a Ag and Markets official. That should be the mentality, like, this just happened. We didn't like this. Obviously, people perished. This was not something that, this is not why people make cheese and sell cheese. No, so how do we all get together and on all levels, from the people who are the end user to the maker to the scientist to interpret what the maker is doing, kind of take a closer look, you know, like, and go forward from it. But on a happier note, oh, that's not happy.
Yes, thank you.
I see hope. I always feel like that cheese people are very resourceful. Cheese makers are very resourceful. The diehards of us, like, we don't give a fuck. We're going to do our job, and we're going to get there and comply and do whatever the hell we have to do to keep doing what we love. So just bring it on, and we'll take it on, and we'll make it work. And that's how we got it. That's my mindset, you know? Like,
Well, there's a place for all of us in this. I do think that we have a ways to go to coming together as a unit and actually having a voice. And I think we try, but I don't think that we're getting through yet. But I think we have to remember how young we are and how much we need to just go the distance. So I think your attitude is exactly what we need to have. And just...
Yeah. Where you go, man.
You know, it may not happen in our lifetime, Greg, but, you know, our lifetime is short compared to where, you know, to the longevity of what we're talking about. So we just have to put our nose down and work harder.
Which we will. We're in a good spot, and we'll make it better.
Oh, yes, we will, my man. Yes, we will.
Yeah. So on a happier note, I love reading articles to confirm my cheese-eating habits are actually making me healthier. A new study suggests that there may be a compound in aged cheese that helps reduce the risk of liver cancer and extend lifespan. A research team from Texas A&M University found that spermidine, which is a compound found in aged cheese and other foods, when fed to mice as an oral supplement, made those mice less likely to develop liver fibrosis and hepatocellular carcinoma. I actually said all that. Hepatocellular.
I can't believe you did that. Yes, good job.
I get a gold star for that. Lasa, what are your thoughts on cheese as a health food? Do you like it as health food? Is it healthy at all? Because it is. All right.
Well, let's say this. I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this about that.
I have eaten cheese quite heavily since I was 19. And my mother has osteoporosis. I do not. And I run, so my bones are very healthy. But I would say, I would also say that I rely on cheese far more than anything else to give me a pick-me-up. And I don't rely on it to clean my liver or do anything like that, because I do drink fairly heavily, but always very good stuff, I might add. I think cheese is a health food in that I believe it is, it has a lot of vitamins and minerals, and if you look at it, it really, really does. But it also keeps me away. I crave cheese far more than I crave sweets. So for me, it's a food unto itself. I never get tired of it. And I don't ever say I can't have it. So it's one of those things that a little bit goes a long way, because it's always available to me. I always say, yes, I can go to the cheese counter. And even I know people say, oh, it's so much money, and it really isn't. When I look at, I always have several kinds of cheese in the fridge, and they're always great cheeses, and it's a bloody health food to me.
Yeah. It's a bloody health food. I'm going to quote
it's a bloody health food, Mike.
A fucking T-shirt. I'm sorry. Cheese, it's a bloody health food from the Lhasa.
Yes, it's a bloody health food. It's my new bumper sticker.
Good. I'm ending there. Thanks again for coming on the show, Lhasa. I'm looking forward to another great season of Cutting the Curd. Got to get some traction.
Well, I'm going to see you in Chicago, right?
Yeah, you sure are. You absolutely are. I'll be there. Being counter, being culture. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Awesome.
Tune in Monday for a new episode. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.